The show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show Blast, which has won Tony and Emmy Awards, it's called a music spectacular for a very good reason, will be coming to our listening area twice in the next couple of weeks, including next Tuesday at the Assembly Hall Star Theater on the University of Illinois campus. That's at 7:30 show. And then at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday, October 22nd, also a 7:30 show. And I'll be talking to one of the veteran members of Blast on the show in this first half of the program. Later, I'll be talking with Irish singer and multi-instrumentalist Donal McGuire, who will appear in Urbana Sunday evening on the Piper's Hut Concert Series at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana. Looking forward to talking with Donal the second half of the show today. It's live and local on FM 90.9. The tune was called Land of Make-Believe by Chuck Mangione, except it was played by a band of instrumentalists called Blast, with an exclamation point. And they are going to be in our area twice in the coming weeks. Next Tuesday at the Assembly Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Champaign. And then on Saturday the 22nd at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. And I have with me on the phone right now here on Live and Local one of the veterans of the group. Her name is Jean Heasley, and she's been in performing with Blast for the last 10 years or so and had quite a lot of experience before that. Thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about this previous experience? I see here that you marched baritone, meaning either baritone or euphonium instrument, for a group called The Crossmen.
I did. That's how I sort of got my start in moving and playing. The baritone's my primary instrument. I started playing it in the fourth grade. And then in high school, I joined a group, a drum and bugle corps called The Crossmen. At the time, they were out of Ben Salem, Pennsylvania. And I was there for most of my teens and was a music major in college. And in 1999, this Blast thing was sort of created, and I auditioned and got it. And I've been with the cast since the original West End London production in 1999.
Well, I liked how you say it, this Blast thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was trying to figure out a way, how do you describe Blast? And I'm not, I mean, that might be a good as way as any, but you're the interviewee, so you get to say, what is Blast? What is this Blast thing?
It is a spectacle for those who have not seen it. I think the best way I've heard it described is sort of like a live action Fantasia. Unlike a traditional song and dance Broadway musical, Blast brings the musicians up out of the orchestra pit, and we get to visually interpret the music that we're playing. So we dance and move and also provide the soundtrack.
Well, you say out of the orchestra pit, but at some level it's also off of the marching band field, isn't it?
Our roots are in drum and bugle corps, but the movement we do is more complex than that. It's not, you know, just a two-hour halftime show. Our movement is very in-depth. The amount of time that we spend actually just marching around right, left, is not very long, for good or bad sometimes, for your body.
Well, talk about that a little bit. For example, as a baritone player, what do you get to do? What do you ask to do during these shows?
I do have a small dance background, and so I've been making good use, I think, of that. But I also toss my horn. I think one of the neat things about Blast is that in addition to the instrumentalists and the cast members being, you know, a virtuoso at their primary instrument, there's just so much multitasking going on. Everybody in the cast, including all of the dancers, the visual ensemble, cover percussion and dance. We all cross captions, and so you have to be good at a lot of stuff. They keep us very busy.
You say you get to toss your horn around. Does that mean you don't have an expensive horn?
No. On the contrary, I do have a special horn that I toss, and it has been sort of retrofitted so that it will not basically snap apart when I catch it. It's not so much the tossing, it's the catching. And so I've had one that's been welded together. But it still plays beautifully. It's amazing.
I think I'd be more worried about the dropping.
Oh, you know what? I've been with the company for 12 years, and I've only dropped it once on stage ever, and it was in a run-through, so no one ever saw it.
And I hope that you're not going to come back and berate me for asking that question, because you'll now drop it at one of these shows.
No. Well, I am knocking on my bedstand right now.
Yeah.
Wooden object, but no, that's a popular question.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, then I'll move on to see if I can find something that's maybe a little less popular. I am interested not only in the movement that you all do as people and with your instruments, but what kind of sets do you have involved, and are there other visual sorts of things going on besides the people and their instruments?
There is a lot. going on in our show. I don't know the statistic on how much percussion equipment we have, but a big part of our set is the actual instruments themselves. The percussion instruments are all up on a big what's called the band bridge in the back of the stage, and the props that our dancers, that the visual ensemble uses, are really just spectacular. They were all mostly created just for our show, and some of them are very cool. We have there's a section of the show, and it's called Lemon Tech, when the lights in the theater go out and the stage is just black lit, and the dancers are spinning these, manipulating these props with glow sticks in them, and it's really, really striking. It's one of my favorite parts of the show.
Well, does that suggest maybe we ought to play that tune right now that goes along with that?
Sure, let's do it.
We can do that. And it is Lemon Tech, like Lemon the instrument? I mean Lemon the fruit?
Lemon the fruit.
Yeah. And it's from the show called Blast, which you can see in Champaign on the U of I campus next Tuesday, or I should say, at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday, October 22nd. My guest is Gene Heasley, who is a veteran of the group, and you're listening to Live and Local. And that was the group Blast. I didn't even know if you can say it's a group. I mean, what? It's the show Blast, but of course, for recording purposes, it is a group performing here. And Gene, are you involved in that piece, Lemon Tech? In that recording?
I am. It's funny. I am at the very end. The brass players toss flags out to the dancers, and so for I think 6 whole counts, I am involved in Lemon Tech, and then I have. Grab my didgeridoo and get out on stage.
Didgeridoo?
Yeah.
Now that was a curve. How do you go from baritone to didgeridoo?
I am actually one of the didgeridoo soloists this season, and it's so much fun. When Blast started in 1999, they made the decision to have didgeridoos in the performances. They hired a guy named Joel. Sorry that I can't remember his last name right now. It's been so long. And he made us all didgeridoos, and we took didgeridoo lessons, and some of us were, I don't know, turned out to be natural didge players.
I just talked with somebody on this show yesterday, I think, who is Australian.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he has tried the didgeridoo and just can't do a thing with it. And so here you are, I assume born and bred American, and you just picked up that Aboriginal Australian instrument, and it works for you.
I think we have a leg up being a brass player, especially a low brass player, because the mouthpiece on the didge is quite large. We find that it's easier for the low brass to play it than it is, say, the trumpets and the French horns. But yeah, I love it. It's fun, and it's really a versatile instrument.
Somebody,
I'm sure not many people think of.
We had a didgeridoo player on here some time ago, and he said that he found it to be a meditative experience. Does that resonate with you or not really?
Well, here's the thing with my didgeridoo is that when I play it and when I'm the soloist on stage, there's I'm circular breathing the whole time, but you know, with blast in the movement, I'm also jumping around and dancing. And so after I come out from Didge, even though I'm pretty I don't know, stationary, you know, on stage, you know, within a small cube of space, maybe 3x3 square of space in which I'm dancing, it feels like I've run a marathon because of the circular breathing while you're out there.
I can just imagine being hyperventilated by all of that.
Yeah. It feels always, after the lights go out, that first inhalation is always the sweetest thing.
You know, I was looking here that you guys have won a Tony Award for the show back in 2001 and also an Emmy Award. But I don't see here how it was you ended up with an Emmy Award. Was there a special on TV that Blast was featured in?
When we were in the West End of London, PBS came over and filmed a special on us. They did really a wonderful video of our show, which is still available on DVD. And that is for what we got our Emmy for in choreography for that. It was Jim Moore, John Vanderkoff, and George Pinney, our choreographers.
What drew you to the whole drum and bugle style of playing in the first place? And I know this is an a great expansion on that, but going back to your early experience with the Crossmen, what enthused you about being in there and then made you want to continue in it?
I'm not sure exactly. I think I grew up on the South Shore of Long Island, and I was completely unaware of the world of competitive marching band. It just wasn't available, you know, in my area or at the school I was at. And so when I was 15 years old, an alumnus of the high school came and said, you know, had been in the Crossmen, and said they were looking for baritone players, you know, would you like to come check this out? And I just thought, okay, you know, but really not thinking about it. You know, I was 15 years old and on Long Island and thinking, you know, I got a weekend away from my parents, like, great, let's go. And when I got there, it just turned out it was just this wonderful thing. And it was literally like we played like, you know, we were on G bugles at the time. So we played, you know, a concert G, and there was just, you know, 60 brass in the room. And it was so, you know, resonant and loud and powerful for me at the time. I had never, you know, heard or been a part of anything quite like it. So I was hooked from that very first tuning note, and I ended up marching there for 6 years.
And I see that you're actually now an instructor, or have been an instructor, choreographer, designer for marching bands in high schools and color guards, and still a member of another color guard. When you say color guard, is that essentially a drum and bugle corps show?
The color guard refers to, like, the dancers, the flags and the rifles and the sabers. So a little later in life than most, I decided to pick that up as a hobby, but it became a great love of mine. And with the group, we were very successful. I think when I was there, we won 2 world championships.
Yeah, well, I imagine that, I mean, I know you said you have a dance background, but with all the stuff you're being asked to do, do you have to do certain kinds of exercises and workouts to maintain the athleticism you need for both of these kinds of shows, the Color Guard and also, of course, Blast?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. If you see the show, you would think, oh, if you watched Blast, oh, maybe they don't need to exercise because it is such a physical thing. But, you know, when we're on the road, it's just about hotel gyms and running and trying not to eat too many waffles at the hotel breakfast to sort of maintain shape.
But in between times?
In between times, absolutely. I mean, it's just, I guess, for me, because I'm mainly a brass player, the color guard thing, being with Vanguard, sort of was my in-between time extracurricular exercise. It just was accidentally really successful competitively.
Do you find before and after the Blast shows, everybody on the crew doing all kinds of stretches and so on to keep from injury?
We are really, I find that we have a lot of yogis hiding in the group. You know, you walk around the theater and, you know, hidden behind the bass drum somewhere, you know, someone is maybe meditating or hitting a downward facing dog. So we keep we have to keep active, and it's mostly not for the show, but because we're touring the country right now in Blast. It's a 72-city bus and truck tour, and so we spend a lot of time sitting on the bus.
Well, I think that it ought to be a wonderful, spectacular experience for people to go see Blast, and you have two opportunities to do it on Tuesday at the Assembly Hall Theater in on the University of Illinois campus in Champaign. That starts at 7:30. And then on Saturday, the 22nd of October, at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. And among the performers you will see in the show Blast is Gene Heasley in the baritone section, and it's been my pleasure to talk with her here on Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us, and best of luck with your tour and staying healthy and all that.
Thank you very much.
And we'll go out with a tune here called Everybody Loves the Blues on Live and Local. Everybody Loves the Blues, it's called, from the stage show Blast, which will be at the Assembly Hall in Champaign on the U of I campus on Tuesday, and then on October 22nd at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Support for our show today comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. We also have support from the Champaign County Humane Society, promoting animal welfare since 1951. Adopt your next pet from the Humane Society, a proud member of Community Shares of Illinois, your choice for payroll donations at work. On the web at cs-il.org.
Good people, lend an ear, says the poor owl man, while the truth I will relate in me doleful song. How the landlord threw me out of me farm and me house, and in the union I am found, says the poor old man, me dwelling they pulled down. Says the poor old man, and he levelled it to the ground, says the poor old man. Where me rent I freely paid, and me children three I reared, till they had to cross the seas, says the poor old man. In Rathkeel I am well known, says the poor old man, for it is me native home, says the poor old man. Until the landlord dispossessed every man without a lease from the land they have reclaimed, says the poor old man. It's no wonder I should fret, says the poor old man, after where I left me sweat, says the poor old man, to be torn out of the house that I thought me own, that me father built of yore, says the poor old man. I've no reason to complain, says the poor old man, since a pauper I became, says the poor old man. It's the landlord I may blame for my poor and scanty mail, a dish of foreign engine mail, says the poor old man. If machiners were not here, says the poor old man, as they were in former days, says the poor old man, we'd be working at our trade with our rape and hook and spade, and we'd have some cash to spare, says the poor old man. But if Dan were here today, says the poor old man, it's then we'd get fair play, says the poor old man. For he'd get the tenant right, and his foes he would defy, and I'd have no cause to fly, says the poor old man. But if landlords we could hate, says the poor old man, I would dress him very neat, says the poor old man. I'd put pepper on his head, neck, belly, fins and tail, and I'd have a hearty meal, says the poor old man.
That was a tune called The Old Man's Complaint. It comes off of a CD simply called Michael Davitt by the singer and instrumentalist Donald McGuire from Ireland, and he is actually with us here in the States right now because he's going to be performing in Urbana on Sunday at on the Piper's Hut concert series at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana. That show starts at 8 o'clock, and he's with me on the phone right now. Thanks very much for joining us.
A pleasure, Kevin, a pleasure.
We have been going round and round by email and telephone and for about a week now.
But we've made it,
As you've been traveling around, which is the first thing I want to ask you about. I mean, looking at your biography here, you make a point of saying you've been singing in public on and off for 40 years.
Mm.
And it's taken you until just a relatively few years ago to start doing it full time. Why is that?
Well, yes, because, you know, it's not all rock and roll, as they say, you know, playing music for a living. I made the conscious decision, I suppose, about 30 years ago that I wasn't going to. I was prepared to stick with my day job where I was teaching and working with young offenders, more or less as a quasi-educational psychologist, that type of work. And rather than take the risk, and there are considerable risks, I think, associated with playing full-time. Anyway, I got early retirement about 10 years ago, Kevin, and I've been playing more or less on and off since, on a more or less full-time basis. You know, more or less when it suits me, as it were, if that doesn't sound too arrogant, you know?
Well, no, that sounds like it gives you a certain amount of freedom, which I hope makes it more fun.
Well, of course, absolutely, absolutely. And I don't have to totally rely on it, you know, to put the food on the table, you know what I mean?
I'm actually intrigued because I didn't know this until it just came out of your mouth right now, what it was you did as a full-time job beforehand.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm actually quite intrigued by that, working with young offenders. Is that, have you found that sort of work to creep into your music at all?
Well, there is an overlap in as much that, I mean, I wasn't a financial advisor or a broker on the stock exchange or a banker. It might give you a clue as to my political proclivities. I suppose given that the music for me has always been political, whether with a capital or a small P, in as much that it's the only art form, I think, that reflects what the loves, hates of ordinary people, dare I say. And I suppose it fitted that there was a sort of continuum there. I worked with the less able and the less, you know, sort of endowed with the riches, you know, that are sort of so unevenly distributed. I suppose I fell into sort of teaching and, you know, when working with the less off young people, you know. So there is a link there, I think, with the music that I love, you know.
Well, since you mentioned a certain amount of political influence in some of your songs.
Absolutely, yeah.
Gives us a chance to mention your current project regarding mm-hmm. regarding the activist Michael Davitt, who was a new name to me, not being
okay.
In spite of my name, not being Irish.
Sure. Well, I think Davitt, in some ways, it could be argued, has been sort of airbrushed out of Irish history, in as much despite the fact that he was, in my opinion and the opinion of many, that he was one of the most significant characters thrown up in 19th century Irish history, and his activity in setting up the Land League, which was again fighting for the rights of tenant farmers, he himself having been thrown off the land as a four-year-old, migrated to England and lived coincidentally in the town that I live in East Lancashire. He went on to lose his arm in a mail, became politicized, blah, blah, blah. I could talk for a fortnight about this man, Kevin. But he was, as they say, to use the cliche, he was years ahead of his time, in as much that his far thinking on matters to do with, like, women in politics. For example, on the Davitt album, you hear some stuff by Anna Parnell, you know, was arguably one of the first women political activists in Europe. He advocated all sorts of co-education, you know, multi-denominational schools. Apart from the enormous contribution he made to land reform, which, of course, ultimately led to, one could argue, to political freedom, you know, in the 1920s. So, anyway, it was the centenary of his death 5 years ago, and I was asked if I was doing anything to commemorate this. So I started researching various songs, and indeed the song you've just played, I put the tune to it, which is the Shan Van Vucht, the poor old woman traditional song, and I found this text, and the two seem to marry to talk about the lot of people who were at the mercy, really, of the landlordism in Ireland. So, as I say, I could talk about Michael Davitt for a month, never mind a fortnight.
Well, and you are talking about him, so to speak, through the medium of film, working on a documentary about
that's
him.
That's right. We were filming this summer and conducted a series of interviews, and there'll be a cross between, there'll be the academic, we can't ignore the, in as much as it can be, sort of dispassionate view of the academic, you know. I'm not an historian, you know, but I've used serious professional historians to give their views, you know. And you can see the overlap with what's happening in the here and now in the town I live in East Lancashire. You can see the Irish in the 1850s. You can cross out Irish and insert Asian heritage. So there's Bangladeshi, Pakistani migration, and there's the same sort of simmering, shall we say, latent unrest that the Irish experienced. You know, that it's the sort of sick. Well, I suppose I want to sort of point out that there's nothing new about what's going on, and there is a link with the history tells us that, you know, points out the cyclical nature of this sort of social unrest that one can see simmering happily in Britain right now, you know, indeed in certain parts of Ireland.
Sure. Let's take another song from that CD called Michael Davitt, The Forgotten Hero, from 2006, and this is called The Rocky Road to Dublin, in which you do accompany yourself on the banjo.
Okay.
Anything to say about this?
Yeah, well, most people's experience of that song would be mainly based on the Dubliners' rendition of it, which, you know, is, oh, hey, wahey, waho, you know, banging and, you know, shouting and roaring. But most people forget, really, what the song is actually about. If you ask people who've been listening to the song for years, they might think, oh, well, it's a sort of happy-go-lucky sort of song. But in fact, when you actually look at the text of the song, it's the way the West of Ireland people are typified as just like financial units to be hired or fired, you know? And as they gradually make their way to cross to England in search of work, like they're continually harassed, you know, like, are you looking for work? You know, this. And it reinforces the sort of prejudices I grew up with, you know, that you get everywhere. Do you know, like, I believe West Virginia is these guys are the whipping boys of American jokes. Is that not true?
Well, you know, there's some truth to that.
You know,
they're not the only whipping boys.
Oh,
in American
sure.
Jokes.
Sure. Well, there's a pecking order, you know, like Kerry jokes get Kerry men get the jokes, and people from Mayo, as where David was from, would have been seen as, you know, like, these are people from the top of the mountain. You know, these are people who are not as sophisticated as people like me from the East Coast. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so when your man gets to Dublin, you know, he's taken a look. He said, oh, I'd like to have a look around. And then his stuff is nicked. His bundle is stolen. And he discovers that his Connacht brogue wasn't much in vogue on the rocky road to Dublin. So he skedaddles out of Dublin, gets to Liverpool, and the same things happen. The locals are taking the mick out of him, you know? And so on. It's a song about, you know, about social stratification without being too profound about it. It's just a different way of thinking about the song that people have heard for years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, let's.
So that's why I included it.
All right. Well, let's hear it right now. We're talking with Donald McGuire, who's performing at the Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. It's coming Sunday at 8 o'clock. And here he's singing The Rocky Road to Dublin on Live and Local.
In the merry month of May, from me home I started, left the girls at tomb, nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear. Kiss me, darling mother, drank a pint of beer, me grief and tears to smother, then off to reap the corn, leave where I was born, cut the stout black thorn to banish ghosts and goblins, a brand new pair of brogues, rattling all the bogs, frightening all the dogs. On the rocky road to Dublin,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to Dublin, whack for lolly ra.
In Mullingar that night I rested limbs so weary, started by daylight, next morning light and airy, took a drop of the pure to keep me heart from sinking. That's the Paddy's cure whenever he's on for drinking, to see the lassie smile, laughing all the while at me curious style. 'Twas set your heart a bubbling, asked if I was high, the wages I required, till I was sick and tired of the rocky road to Dublin.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. On the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to Dublin, whack for lolly ra.
In Dublin next arrived, I thought it such a pity to be so soon deprived of view of that fine city. Then I took a stroll, all among the quality bundle it was stolen in the neat locality. Something crossed me mind when I looked behind, no bundle could I find upon me stick. A wobbling inquired and for the rogue, said that me Connacht brogue, it wasn't much in vogue on the rocky road to Dublin.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to Dublin, whack fa lolly ra.
From there I got away, me spirits never failing, landed on the quay just as the ship was sailing. Captain at me roared, said that no room had he, when I jumped aboard a cabin found for Paddy. Down among the pigs played some funny rigs, danced some hearty jigs, the water round me bubbling went off Holyhead. Wish myself was dead, or better far, instead on the rocky road to Dublin.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to Dublin, whack for lolly ra.
The boys of Liverpool, when we safely landed, called myself a fool. I could no longer stand it, blood began to boil. Temper I was losing, poor old Erin's Isle. They began abusing her, ram me so, says I, me shillelagh. I'll apply, Galway boys were by, and so I was a hobbling. With a loud array, they joined in the affray. We quickly cleared the way for the rocky road to Dublin.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to Dublin, whack for lolly ra.
The song was called The Rocky Road to Dublin. Donald McGuire, both singing and playing the banjo, and he's my guest here on this portion of Live and Local. The first song that we played from that CD, you were just singing solo, The Old Man's Complaint, and here you're accompanying yourself on a single instrument. And I'm wondering how you came to be doing so much solo singing, and what is especially challenging about that? I mean, what are some of the things that need to go into that to make it effective?
Well, excuse me. I've always been intoxicated, really, by the whole, since I first heard Unaccompanied Song, which was like, to be quite frankly, a revelation to me, you know, because I was brought up listening to pop music. You know, I never listened to, I never heard traditional music as a child. And it was only, I think I probably mentioned before, the Clancy Brothers and their triumphal return from the States here to Ireland helped popularize. In the time-honored fashion, it was the same with traditional music, fiddle playing, you know, like great musicians from Ireland recording their music here. The music going back to Ireland was a revelation to Irish people. People listened to their own music for the first time, paradoxically recorded in the States and indeed latterly in London, but that's another story. So I was always fascinated by the idea of just the single voice being able to hold an audience, you know, and became interested in the artistic nature of the art form itself. I think it was quite hauntingly beautiful, you know, and that's what I suppose enticed me. And indeed, Kevin, it's so much easier to look after yourself, as it were,
well,
to sort
true.
Oneself out and cater for your own ego than cater for maybe 4 or 5 other people's egos. i.e. working with bands can be a bit of a pain in the neck. In fact, I've just been recounting tales with my host here in New York, you know, tales associated with playing with different personae, you know. And some of the difficulties and hurdles we have to, you know, leap over. So there's that pragmatic, you know, it's great to just be able to suit oneself, do you know?
Well, and I guess if you need an accompanist and you can just call on yourself, that makes it all the better. Although we have a tune here that you told me before we started recording, you were kind enough to ask somebody else to accompany you on the harp, and whoever it is does
track.
It beautiful. Yeah, this is from the 2000 released CD called The Clergy's Lamentation. And
Wendy Stewart playing the harp.
Wendy Stewart, okay.
And who's a wonderful player.
Yeah, well, let's listen to both of you. It's a gorgeous song, and we're talking with Donald McGuire here in Live and Local. Thank you. The tune was called The Clergy's Lamentation. It comes from a CD of the same name with vocalist Donald McGuire and the harpist Wendy, what did you say her last name is?
Stewart.
Wendy Stewart. Here on Live and Local, Donald McGuire will be performing in Urbana Sunday night. And so when you give workshops, I know you do some singing workshops. You're not doing any while you're here, I don't think.
Not in Urbana, no.
Yeah, what do you tell young people who want to do some solo singing or maybe just on accompanied singing of some kind?
Okay, well, I think the first step is to truly ask oneself, you know, why does one want to actually sing the particular song that you're interested in singing, you know? And once you've satisfied yourself that it's that there's something of significance here that you want to share with an audience, well, then you go and think about the most appropriate way of actually achieving that sort of objective. And that will affect, I think, the way you emotionally relate to the song or the content of the song will very much determine the noise that comes out of your mouth. You know, so here, so it's a very personal thing. It's not a question of plagiarizing, you know, someone else's singing of a song. You know, do you want to sing like this body or sing it like that body? The way people do when they sing covers, you know, of whatever, whether it's rock and roll or whether it's traditional music or whatever the hell, it doesn't matter. You know, you have people who's, I know guys who sound more like Johnny Cash than Johnny Cash. Do you know what I mean? And fellas who sound more like Elvis than Elvis. So it becomes a very sort of personal thing. And then you can, the whole definition of workshop is so varied that people have so many different interpretations of what that term actually means that some ways you're guided by what people ask you. But if I was asked myself to put my spin on it, it would be something along those lines. And then you would help the singer work on the most effective way and techniques in terms of style, developing a particular style. Now, that's the most important notion. When somebody opens their mouth to sing, I don't listen to their voice per se. I listen to the style in which they sing. So that's, and that's to do with listening. You would encourage the punter to actually listen to as wide a variety of, if in the Irish tradition, of styles within Ireland, you know, that one could possibly listen to. As a revival singer, you know, I think it's incumbent on you to do that, to try and reflect the different styles. So I sing songs from Connemara in the west of Ireland, I sing songs from the south, I sing songs from the north, and be mindful of the singing style that you're trying to reflect without overtly plagiarizing. So it's not that easy.
No, I'm sure not. I was thinking,
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking we might go out here with an instrumental, but since we have been talking about singing, let's not do that. And
well, Bridgie Flynn might be an example.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking of because it comes from an album that has a wonderful title, which is Gilded Chains and Sordid Affluence.
That song used to be, again, getting back to the Rocky Road to Dublin, that song was churned out by the Flanagan Brothers in the 20s who were based in New York, I think. Again, banjo and two-row accordion. And it was... that sort of pace. And was seen as a sort of comic song, but I think there's a lot of pathos in the song. Do you know? And it's all to do with the family, this guy who's browbeaten to a large extent by the family tradition, and his mother in particular. And the fixation about land ownership, bringing us back to Michael Davitt. You know, so there's all sorts of issues going on. And he's scared about being left on his own. Do you know? So there's all of these things going on. I thought it was a different approach to a song written by Percy French, who was responsible more for the stage Irish persona development than anyone else. But I think he got it right with this one.
And you did this album with some jazz musicians. Who's the saxophonist?
Oh, a guy called Ian Dixon, who's a wonderful player.
Yeah, he sounds beautiful.
He's a great player. And Mike Walker, is the guitar player, is arguably one of the finest jazz guitarists on two legs. And I mean anywhere.
Well, we'll enjoy going out with this song called Little Bridget Flynn. It comes from the CD Gilded Chains and Sordid Affluence by Donald McGuire, who will be performing solo on Sunday at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. For more information on the series, go to pipers-hut.com. And for more information on Donald McGuire, go to Donald McGuire, donaldmaguire.co.uk. And it has been my pleasure to talk with you, and I wish we could keep doing it, but we got to move on. And it's live and local here on FM 90.9.
I've an insulated house and a cow or two to grass. There's a plant garden running by the door. I've a shelter for the hens and a stable for the ass. And what can a man want more? I don't know, maybe so. For a bachelor is easy and he's free. But I've lots to look after and I'm living all alone. But there's no one looking after me. Now my father often tells me that I should have a try to find a girl that owns a bit of land. And I know the way he says it, that there's someone in his eye. And me mother's got the whole thing planned. I don't know, will she go? But would mollify them greatly to agree. But there's little Bridgie Flynn, sure it's all I'd love to win. Though she never throws an eye to me.
You're listening to Donald McGuire here on Live and Local with some jazz musicians with whom he teamed up in that particular recording, Little Bridget, or Little Bridgie Flynn, as he says in there. And he'll be at the Heartland Gallery in Urbana Sunday night at 8 o'clock. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, excuse me. And there is a whole lot going on in our listening area this weekend that you can go out and see and hear live. And let's see how much of it we can get in. Starting with tonight at 7:30 at Parkland College, the theater there is presenting Tennessee at 100. That's Tennessee Williams and his number of one-act plays being given in two sets. So you have to check their website for the complete schedule, but I can tell you that set A is tonight at 7:30, and then there's a performance of set B tomorrow at 3 o'clock, and I'm not sure if it continues after that or not. The In Your Ear Big Band is playing at the Cowboy Monkey in downtown Champaign at 6:30 this evening. The Aduki Jazz Trio play at Michael's Restaurant in Bloomington this evening at 6 o'clock. On the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, it's faculty tubist Andy Rummel playing at Kemp Recital Hall. That is an 8 o'clock recital. On the campus of the University of Illinois in Urbana, flutist Jonathan Keeble, also the faculty, is performing at the Krannert Center. That's at 7:30 tonight. At the Iron Post in downtown Urbana, the Prairie Dogs are playing at 5 o'clock this evening, and later on at 9 o'clock, Emily Otness has a CD, or rather EP, release party. That starts at 9. Bill Porter plays the blues at the Castle Theater in Bloomington tonight at 7:30. There's the Swing Street Jazz Ensemble at Robbie's Restaurant in Springfield this evening at 5:30. And a bunch of bluegrass bands playing at Memphis on Main in downtown Champaign starting tonight at 9 o'clock. The Whistle Pigs, Carrie Nation and the Speakeasy, and the Devout Sinners are all playing there. The Impalas play the blues at Huber's in Champaign this evening at 8 o'clock. It's the Nakatani Gong Orchestra at the University YMCA on the U of I campus in Champaign. That's at 8 o'clock. The Heartland Festival Orchestra plays Beethoven Lives Upstairs at Five Points Washington tomorrow evening at 7:30, and then they have a matinee on Sunday at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow evening at 7:30. It's rockapella performing. And Mike Fanolio Duo plays jazz in Bouvons in Urbana. That's at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. At the ISU, that's the Oktoberfestival at Kemp Recital Hall. That's tomorrow, starting at 10 in the morning and running till 6 o'clock in the evening. At the Canopy Club in Urbana, tomorrow evening at 6:30, it's an a cappella fest with the Girls Next Door from the University of Illinois. It's the Ozark Jubilee with the Doofus Doolittle Comedy, Bluegrass, and Country at the Effingham Performance Center. That's at 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock on Saturday. Samba Soul perform at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. And Voices from the Past, the Evergreen Cemetery Discovery Walk with a lot of different performers twice tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the morning and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They repeat that on Sunday at the same two times. Don't Ask play klezmer music at Strawberry Fields in Urbana Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. It's Dennis Stromat and Creole Spirit at the Champaign Public Library Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And faculty and guest instrumental recital at Millikan University's Kuiper Hall. Cellist Amy Flores, Elizabeth Ducey Moss, soprano, and then Jay Doran, pianist. That's Sunday evening at 7:30. And that is what we have time for. We have support today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. This is 90.9 WYL-FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR and classical music and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. It'll be sunny this afternoon, a high temperature of 85 degrees. We're just about there now. It's 84 coming up on a minute past 1:00.